Barely, said Doug. Brennard smiled at the lad. At Moonbase you have to build twice the solar power capacity that you really need, because the area's in night for 2 weeks at a time. At Mount Wasser we can provide electrical power constantly. Once you put up the solar panels, said Joanna, we can use nanomachines to build a power tower on the mountaintop and transmit the energy back to Moonbase by bouncing a microwave power beam off a relay satellite, Doug added eagerly. Shaking her head slightly, Joanna said, Moonbase is only marginally profitable. This expedition can put Moonbase solidly into the black, said Brennard. There's enough power and enough water at the South Pole to allow Moonbase to grow and prosper. But the cost. Mom, Doug said, if we don't claim the polar region, somebody else will. Joanna started to reply, then hesitated. He's right, said Brennard. Yamagata's planning an expedition, we're pretty certain. And the Euro-Russians aren't fools. They know the value of that territory. No corporation could claim it owned any part of the moon. No nation could claim sovereignty over lunar territory. Treaties signed almost a century earlier prevented that. But after people had actually begun building bases on the moon and digging up lunar resources, the Earthbound lawyers had to find some legal method of assuring some form of property rights. They cloaked their decisions in clouds of legalistic verbiage, but what it boiled down to was that any entity, which was defined as an individual or a combination of individuals, which could establish that it was utilizing the natural resources of a specific part of the moon's surface or subsurface, was entitled to exclusive use of that territory. It was not first-come, first-served, exactly. It was the first to show utilization of a chunk of lunar real estate who could expect legal protection against others who wanted to use the same area. Well, said Brennard as he sat facing Joanna, like the man says, there it is. We can reach Aitken Basin first and use those resources to make Moonbase a real city. Think of what we can do. A year's worth of tourist income would more than pay for the expedition. Tourists, Joanna snapped. Tourism destroyed Lunograd. Ah, Mom, that was years ago, Doug replied. Tourists go to the space stations, don't they? If we could build reasonable facilities for them, they'd spend their money at Moonbase. They could plant their boot prints where no one has ever stepped before, Brennard said. If we built a big enough enclosure and filled it with air at Earth normal pressure, they could fly like birds. On plastic wings that we rent to them, Doug added. Suppressing an urge to laugh, Joanna said, that's all in the future. Yes, said Brennard, but the future starts now. The resources at the South Pole can make Moonbase into a true city. Or maybe Yamagata or the Europeans will get there first, and Moonbase will never be able to grow much beyond where it is now. Joanna recognized the threat. There's only one detail that still bothers me. Brennard leaned forward slightly and fixed his pale blue eyes on her. And what might that be? Turning slightly, Joanna said, my son here. He wants to go along with you. Brennard looked over at Doug and smiled broadly. You do, eh? You bet, said Doug. I've been spending every minute I can in lunar simulators. I can handle a tractor or a hopper, and I've got the rest of the summer free. Brennard laughed his high-pitched giggle. You want to come along to the lunar South Pole for your summer vacation? Grinning back at him, Doug said, I know it won't be a vacation, but yes, I very much want to go. He wants to go so much, Joanna said, unsmiling, that he's threatened to go to Japan and take a job with Yamagata Industries. Sobering, Brennard said, Yamagata's people don't give soft jobs to Americans, you know. Only the dog work, basic construction labor, stuff like that. I know, said Doug, but it'll be on the moon. You want to get to the moon that bad? I want to be at the frontier. I want to go places where no one's been before. With a solemn nod, Brennard admitted, I know the feeling. If I approve your planned expedition, Joanna said, will you take Doug with you? If I say no, will you still approve the expedition? She looked into those ice-blue eyes, then said, I might approve it more easily if you say no. I mean it, Mom, Doug said. I'll go to Yamagata. Brennard smiled again. I like his spirit. Reminds me of his father. If I approve, Joanna cut off any reminiscences. I want Doug under your direct supervision. I want you to keep your eyes on him every moment. Both eyes, Foster. Bernard hesitated a moment, as if marshaling his thoughts. We'll have to find some useful task for him. There'll be no room on the expedition for anyone who can't pull his own weight. I can be the legal recorder, said Doug. You don't have anyone in your group who's responsible for recording the corporation's legal claim to the polar region. I can do that for you. Bernard rubbed his chin. We were going to take turns recording everything with vidcams, but I suppose it makes some sense to have somebody specifically assigned to that responsibility. Joanna said nothing, but she realized that Doug had thought all this out very carefully. Grinning, Bernard asked, You've really put in time in lunar simulators? You're certified for tractor operation and hoppers? Nearly 50 hours, said Doug. With a shrug, Bernard said, I've got no objections to your coming with us. Then I can go? Joanna sank back in her chair and closed her eyes briefly. Yes, she said reluctantly. You can go. But she sat up straight again and leveled a finger at Bernard. He's your responsibility, Foster. I don't want him out of your sight. Bernard nodded easily. I'll treat him as if he was my own son. Don't worry, Mom, said Doug, almost dancing with excitement. I'll be fine. What can happen to me? Joanna stared at Doug, grinning from ear to ear, just like his father, who died on the moon. Moon Base. I hate his guts, said Jack Killifer. Who, Brennart? Nah, little Dougie. Doug Stavanger? That's right, Killifer said sourly. Mama's boy. How can you hate him? You haven't even seen him yet. He's not due to arrive until... I don't have to see him, Killifer snapped. The little pissants already screwed me over. Killifer and Roger Deems were sitting in Moonbase's mess hall, a cavern large enough to hold the entire regular staff of 50, plus a dozen or so visitors. At the moment, in the middle of a work morning, they were the only two people seated at the tables. A few others drifted in now and then, made their way down the line of automated dispensing machines, then headed back to their offices or workplaces. Known to the regular lunatics as the Cave, the galley had been carved out of the rock of Alphonsus's Ringwall Mountains by the same plasma torch crews who had dug the tunnels that now served as living quarters, laboratories, offices, and workshops for Moonbase. They had left the cave ceiling rough-hewn, unpolished rock, hence its name. The walls were smooth, though, and the floor was planted with the toughest species of grasses that could be found on Earth. 12 square plots of grass, forbidden to step upon, tended constantly and lovingly by the agro team, formed a green counterpoint to the tables and chairs scattered across the cave's floor. Full-spectrum lamps spanned the rock ceiling, keeping the cave as bright as noontime on an Iowa summer day. The lunatics joked that you could tell how much time a person spent in the cave by how tanned he or she was. Ceilings, walls, and the smooth rock walkways and floor beneath the tables were all sprayed with clear, airtight plastic. Why are you pissed with the kid? Asked Roger Deems. He was sitting across the small table from Killifer. Both men had mugs of what was supposed to be vitamin-enriched fruit juice before them. Both had laced their drinks liberally with rocket juice from Moonbase's illicit traveling still. The two men were a study in contrasts. Killifer was lean, lantern-jawed, his face hard and flinty. His light brown hair was shaved down almost to his scalp. His eyes were deep-set, piercing, suspicious. Deems was large, round, plump, his dark locks curling down to his shoulders, his soft brown eyes wide. He always seemed startled, like a deer caught in a car's headlights. Killifer took a long sip from his mug, then placed it down on the table. I'm supposed to be second in command on this expedition, right? Right? Yeah, but Brennart's put this snot-nosed Douglas Stavanger in ahead of me. But Dougie's only aboard as an observer, Deems protested. And Brennard had to bring him in. Orders from Savannah. Yeah, I know. Orders from Mama. She's the real pain in my ass. She's the boss. Damned bitch. Deems tried to make light of his companion's mood. Hey, you don't know her well enough to call her names like that. I know her, Killifer muttered. How'd you think I came up here to the moon in the first place?